Hi, folks. Just a quick appeal, I suppose. Realistically, this project, this platform requires people to pay it forward. And how we do that is we rely on the Patreon model. We need people to go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, look at the levels there, and join us. It's really that simple. By doing that, you help keep these podcasts free and available as often as possible to as many people as possible. You'll also get lots of additional content. There's patron-only podcast, there's access to the live shows, there is discount codes, there's all sorts of other benefits, as well as a consolidated podcast feed with all of them in one place, which means you don't have to listen to these appeals. I know many of you don't like them anyway. If you could, please just click the link in the bottom of the podcast. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Have a look at the levels. It would really help. I mean, you know, I'd like to think that if we bumped into one another on the street, you might be buying us a cup of coffee. This is a way of buying it, that virtual cup of coffee, and it helps keep these mics on and keep us independent. Really appreciate it. I'll let you enjoy the podcast. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. This is part of our continued coverage of the Assembly Elections 22, some of which are already out now. And if you were catching up, actually, I got great feedback just to the conversation we had with Sam McElwain, who's not a candidate, but was giving us feedback on how things were being perceived in the Unionist and Loyalist community. And one really interesting aspect he said was that he got feedback from candidates, and that while the protocol mattered, it was not even in the top three or four of most of the people they spoke to. So we might get into that now with our guest today. And I'm delighted to be rejoined on the podcast for the first time in a while by Belfast City Mayor for 2021-22, Alliance candidate in Belfast herself, and that party spokesperson for migration, Kate Nicol. Kate, how are you doing?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. And listeners are probably aware that Kate is 35 weeks pregnant now, Kate. So what timing you have?
This was not planned. But all good so far, thankfully. Which I'm happy to take.
Well, I've looked at the history of stormed elections. They can just happen at any stage, you know.
That's it.
Life must go on. But look, first of all, how are you finding the campaign, and within the Alliance of Party itself, like you know, I think you've 7 seats currently, and this is where we. How is it going? What's the feel? And is there, I hate to break it to you, like anybody, if you tell me you're getting a good reception on the doors, I'll throttle you, but tell me how you're getting on.
The response on the doors has been so good. It's every single candidate says that. And, I feel positive. I feel really hopeful. The issue with elections is so many people don't answer the door. So you never know if you're getting very good data. And I never know, because I am so heavily pregnant, if people are just being nice to me or if they are actually going to vote for me. I think there really is a sense that we need change. We felt it in the last elections, the local government elections in 2019. Alliance did so well. And that's always a question, you know, is that just that election? Is the surge continuing? And our canvassers feel that the surge is very much still here. The response is largely positive, although there are a lot of people who are fed up with politics in general. So it's trying to convince them that they do need to use their vote and to get involved. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. But it feels like it's never going to end.
Yeah, well, it's not too much longer to go, to be honest. But when you look at it from the perspective of Alliance themselves, you know, if you were to increase your vote share, you know, you could be a player in this thing. But here's the thing. That frustration you speak about from people that I don't, maybe it's not apathy, maybe it's frustration, but I'm hearing it from other people I'm speaking to who aren't candidates for in the electorate, saying, but Stormont hasn't worked for us anyway. And you know, how do Alliance say, well, actually this is an opportunity to make Stormont work. And give us, you know, why we should have that vote.
Yeah. It's something that I've been trying to communicate when I've been talking to constituents, but there's no reason why it shouldn't work. I mean, I'm obviously on Belfast City Council at the moment, and we're 8 different political parties, all with very different looks and views and constitutional positions, and we're still able to work together and to get things done. So there's no reason why Stormont shouldn't do that. There are just issues with how it's run and how political parties have run elections. I mean, the DUP threatening not to go into an executive if Sinn Féin is the biggest party it's just bizarre strategy. First of all, it's anti-democratic, but secondly, you should be running in an election on what you want to deliver and what you want to change. So I can completely understand why people are fed up. What we would argue is that we would bring a different perspective. Naomi is obviously a fantastic leader, and with a stronger team in the assembly, we believe we can get things done. But we need serious reform. And one area we're really interested in is voluntary coalition, because mandatory coalition, it's not one. You can't have a political party just hold everyone to ransom when something doesn't suit them. So there's a lot of reform which is needed, but you need parties who want that elected.
I think that's very fair, because you just can't clamp one thing onto the side of another and just say that's how it has to be done. That there has to be some sort of consensus. And you're right. But to flip from the DUP's negative campaign, you guys, you know, you're trying to talk about a positive campaign. I opened by saying that some of the issues that are coming up. What would you say you're hearing are the top issues for your constituents and the electorate?
Well, it's not the protocol. The main thing that people are worried about is cost of living, the quality of their lives. There's so many people who we know this are really feeling a stretch. And obviously in different areas, it's to different extents, but everyone is worried about the future, the uncertainty. They're worried about the future for the next generation. So many people who are educated in Northern Ireland either grow up feeling like they have absolutely no hope at all, or that if they want to achieve anything, they need to leave. And that's really sad and not reflective of self-Belfast, especially. You know, there's so many opportunities. There's so much good work that's happening in the city. We just need to harness that. So I think future stability, government, they want politicians who can work together. The public are used to working and living together with with everyone, you know, in our community, and politicians don't reflect that. So they just want people who are going to work on day-to-day issues.
The cost of living crisis has been, you know, it's well flagged. It's an issue in the South. It's an issue across the I'm going to say this awful phrase, the developed world, right? And I don't like it, but nonetheless, people understand what we mean by that. When we talk about that, though, the crisis didn't just arrive, though. There was already, you know, issues in Belfast of housing shortages, waiting lists for hospital care, waiting lists for mental health services, and all of these challenges. You know, you've been Lord Mayor. Like, what even locally on the ground has been done to try and ameliorate some of these things?
Yeah, no, you're completely right. This hasn't just come from nowhere. It's been exacerbated by the last 2 years by COVID. But also by not having an assembly for 3 years. You know, we need devolved government. We need strategies in place how we deal with this. We don't have an anti-poverty strategy. One of the biggest issues that I have with how Stormont is run is that, I mean, all government kind of is accused of working in silos, but in the Northern Ireland Assembly especially so. Every department, the permanent secretary is only answerable to the minister, and there's no cross-working. So when you're looking at poverty, that's not just a department for communities. It's to do with everything, you know. It's to do with health. It's to do with justice. There isn't enough joined up thinking, and there isn't enough long term thinking. What we saw in council was that we were really good at rolling out support through grassroots networks. So in areas of multiple deprivation, we have really good community infrastructure. We were able to roll out support really quickly, and it was personalized, targeted support. So often these issues are dealt with by giving out kind of, I don't know, a voucher or some food hampers. And that doesn't work with the long-term problem. So I think, yes, councils are able to do really good work, but you need strategy and long-term thinking from the assembly. And we just don't have it at the moment.
I don't disagree with you on that. I just think it's also very hard to see. I mean, we suffer the same here. We have some, I won't call it inertia, but we have, you know, within our own county councils, it's difficult to get things done. And then you find when they make a decision, sometimes, for example, in our housing situation, the government, the Department of Finance or Department of Housing come back and say, you know, we're doing it the way we want to do it anyway. So it can be difficult. And we spoke to Take Back the City recently in Belfast and talked about land and the Mackey site, about trying to develop that. And there's a lot of challenges that are shared on this island. You mentioned the those struggles, but you are the party spokesperson for migration, and listeners will have picked up that you know, you don't have a typical Belfast accent. You know, Kate, you were born in Zimbabwe, and you've definitely made Belfast your home. Northern Ireland is your home. You've been, the last time we spoke, you were passionate about that, and I know you were involved during your tenure as Lord Mayor and the kind of what you were calling our Belfast and trying to broaden that. Can you give us a sense of that, and as your role as a spokesperson for that? Because, you know, I don't know the demographics in NI, but I can point at the demographic in our House of Parliament at all, and it doesn't reflect our society today. It doesn't look like our Parliament. It doesn't look like our society.
No, and I mean, listen, I'm a white Zimbabwean, so you don't get much more textbook privilege than that. I suppose it stemmed from my interests kind of come from two places. The first is that I moved here when I was 12 years old, and I felt like an outsider, and I found it really difficult to adjust. If I found it that difficult, then what is it like if you're arriving and you have a different skin color or different religion and different language? You know, I found it hard to integrate. It's so much harder for other people. So I'm very conscious of that, and I'm very conscious we're not doing enough to support new communities. The second part is that I worked for the only ethnic minority legislator we've ever had. Annalor was an MLA. I worked for her from 2011 to 2016 in the assembly. And a lot of the casework I did was with refugee and asylum seekers, with our BAME communities. And although a lot of them live in South Belfast because it's the most diverse constituency, they came for support from across Northern Ireland because she was the only person who represented them. And I realize it's a massive issue. So during my term, while I've tried to do whatever I can to ensure that every community in our city knows that they're valued and they're important and that they matter, what I've really been trying to push is the need for communities to put forward their own representatives to run for election. Because you're right, it's a very diverse city now, and it's not representative in terms of our governance. Belfast City Council is entirely white. We have one ethnic minority councillor in the whole of Northern Ireland, and that's Lillian Sonoy-Barr for the SDLP in Derry. It's not reflective, and it needs to change. And while a lot of the issues, and particularly for refugee and asylum seekers, stem from Westminster, from officer responsible for legislation to do with them, the Northern Ireland Assembly is responsible for integration. That's where our powers really lie. And we have this added issue within Northern Ireland that good relations are viewed through the spectrum of orange and green. Mm. So it's very hard to get the support that is needed for other communities because they're just not factored in.
Well, we still don't even, if you still are suffering from a lack of, say, school integration from those right. communities, it's very hard then to even go to, because there are levels and layers to this, and it's as awful as it is to say. Like, I mean, I put out a podcast this morning from that we produce here called Built Different, hosted by three wonderful young women, all of color, all of kind of, and they blew us away on Sunday night at a live show, talking about their cultural identity, black and Irish, and the difficult, and sharing it through their lived experiences. And then they gave us the greatest line ever. Deborah turned to the audience and said, "And we've done this now, but it's up to you to do the bloody work next time." you know, it's not for though. It's not for those. But you're right though that we have to. But that was why when it's important that, you know, as a Torrashack platform, we have those voices talking for themselves, not a middle class white man wanting to.
Exactly. And it's a really hard kind of position to balance that I found in my time as Lord Mayor, because I do not represent Black and ethnic minority communities. I grew up in Zimbabwe, but people can't conflate that. Like I have no lived experience of that sort of discrimination or the barriers that they go through, but I have very deep sympathy and realize that I need to use my position to support in what way I can. And often that's just showing the structures and how they work and encouraging them. So there's a fantastic woman who's from Nigeria and is already doing all the work that a politician does, but doesn't know the structures of how to get involved. And I'm very hopeful she'll get elected soon. So it's just all of us doing that, I guess, you know, using that platform. But I had a child Lord Mayor for the day, which was, it was class. Like she was wonderful. She got more coverage than I did when I became Lord Mayor and from the African community. And that was lovely for her and for her family, but it was still tokenism. You know,
I'm so glad you pointed that out, because that's the other fear that creeps in is, like, I don't know if you saw the hullabaloo here yesterday about Fianna Fáil's health conference that they were putting on for women. And there was literally the entire panel was white middle-class women. And, you know, and when it was pointed out, they went, oh, yes, we'll now ask people. And then you're saying, oh, my God, imagine being the poor qualified expert person who is a person of color saying, am I now just here because... You know,
So,
there's a lot to unpick there, and a lot where we don't see those layers of privilege. Look, we talk all the time on this podcast about class as an issue as well. And definitely how, like, Lynn Rowan was on Sunday and just was explosive, as she always is. I'm a huge fan of the good senator. Here's the question that we have to ask of all candidates. Kate, why are you doing this? Why do you want to do it personally? What do you want to do? Tell me, because I think someone said to me recently, and I won't reveal where, but they said to me, why don't you get into politics? I said, because I don't think I'm mad. But
yeah, you do have to be mad. You need an element of that. Why am I doing it? I fell into politics because I worked for a really inspirational politician, and I saw that actually... it could be a force for good, and we needed people who could work together. I've loved being on Belfast City Council, and I genuinely am so optimistic about our future, especially in the city. I think it's going on one trajectory. But what I'm really interested in, eliminating child poverty, the environment, education, women's health, all these issues, they can only really be addressed, and change can only really happen from the assembly. So that's why I'm running. But also I know that I'm really good at working with other people. I know I have a track record of that, and we urgently need that in the assembly right now. So even though it's not the most convenient time, I am very pregnant. I feel very motivated. And I think it's because in my mind, I am thinking about the next generation. I'm so proud to live here. And I'm really grateful for everything I've had from this city. And I just want everyone to feel the same way.
The issue around, you said Belfast is only heading in one direction. There are obviously aspects of that are very true right now. The economy in certain aspects are booming. Wages are up in certain areas and things. And there are obviously then there's creeping inequalities in that. And then you mentioned the climate issue as well. I mean, Belfast is pretty on the water, pretty exposed. Like Alliance's positions on those things, tackling inequality and the climate change, too many politicians for my money look at these as challenges. And I kind of try to say, is that not an opportunity? You know, where you can say, this is how we do. What's your take on those two big challenges? Because I think they go hand in hand, to be fair.
They do. And I was actually in Dublin visiting your Lord Mayor a few months ago. And we built this really great partnership with Manchester and Liverpool. So the four cities, we formalized working together on mainly on environmental issues. And they came to Belfast and we showed them what we're doing around hydrogen. And I completely agree. You can't view this as simply a challenge. There is so many opportunities for growth, even when you just think we're such a windy island.
Yep.
Generating so much from it. And it ties into the idea of young people leaving because they maybe don't see a future or have career opportunities in something that they would be proud to be a part of. But if we create these opportunities, not only are they better for the planet, but they're incentives for young people to stay. It grows our city. So I completely agree. I think they're interlinked. But I think that we need to focus on how we work together. And I think the partnerships between cities is really important. We saw at COP26 the complete lack of ambition that came from government. And in Northern Ireland, we're pretty used to operating without that. So it was important to me to build those relationships with cities because ultimately we're going to be the ones who are delivering it. And I think if you have especially MLAs who represent city constituencies really pushing for those connections, it's not just learning from other cities and learning from other areas, but raising your ambition as well is so important. I think we've been so behind when it comes to climate in Northern Ireland. We didn't have any climate specific legislation until this year. For a long time, we were just trying to convince members of some political parties that climate change was a thing. But I think now the narrative has really changed. Young people have really pushed that, but it's up to people who are in positions of power to keep that ambition high and to really deliver it. And I really worry that we've gone from people who denied climate change was a thing to just wanting a quiet life and saying whatever they want to appease people, but really don't have any hope of change. And I think we do need to start looking at it through that economic lens because that's how you get people on board.
It's really interesting you should say that because this is my last question to you. We talked about how the protocol is not on the top of the agenda, despite what, even in the Irish media, how they like to cover it, you know, because it makes better headlines if we can say that there was, you know, stones thrown, petrol bombs thrown, or whatever it is, just to stoke that. That's all, whatever, about I think it was the currency of chaos someone described it to me as. But beyond that, I think there's also a misbranding of the protocol. And I do think there's changes coming to it. That's my personal opinion on it. I do think it's not. And also, I do think a lot of things, there are unionist communities who feel that things are threatened. That's legitimate. It's absolutely fair to have those concerns. But within that, it's also a golden ticket because it has the opportunity to if we can soften those that sea border and maintain access to the single market through north south. I mean, the potential there.
You're a bridge to
both. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the attorney, everything always comes down to communication anyway, doesn't it? So yes, the identity issues are valid and they're important. And we have so many legacy issues that are unaddressed. We have a history of politicians preying on the fears of others for their own political gain, and it's abhorrent. You can then look at it and say, well, you know, this is just about trade. And for some people it is. For other people, it's about their identity. So it's how we communicate it. It's how we reassure people who are afraid that they will be okay. But I also think that there is, you know, a need for the business community to say a bit more because privately they'll be like, oh, this is great. You know, we're a bridge to both and actually like business is really good, but they need to be publicly saying it because if you're sitting at home and all you're hearing is when you switch on the news, people saying that this is a disaster, then that's what you're going to believe. We need to have more conversations around it and we need to have politicians who are focused on making Northern Ireland work, but also not exploiting the pre-existing fears in people. That has to end.
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point whereby we've seen young people who feel disenfranchised And it all comes down to that. And it's easier then to stoke those tensions. Whereas, but if we gave people agency over their own lives and a stake in society, I think that's what we're talking about here today. And I think that's really important. I'd be running around. You see, we're saying you want the business community. I'd be saying to them, whenever you say protocol, I want you to add in golden ticket, you know, like literally Willy Wonka's kid, the kids running around going, I got a golden ticket because I think there's an opportunity there. And that's me. But Kate Nicol, Alliance candidate for South Belfast, and Lord Mayor of Belfast, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it, and I hope you're feeling well, and I hope everything goes splendidly in all and always. Thanks so much. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Listen, folks, we'll be back. I know it's coming at you thick and fast at the moment. Thanks so much for all the feedback, and we will keep you in the loop as much as we can. Talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on podcast.